Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on this Getaway Friday, July the 30th, 2021. 16 coming up on 17 minutes past the hour. Before I get to our guest who's going to join us for the first 3 hours this morning, and trust me, we'll need 3 hours to sort out everything going on in the world today. I have a little confession to make, because I want to confess things as we start the program off this morning. Now, yesterday, if you've been listening to the program, you know that my plan since the beginning of summer has been to go to Stewart's Root Beer and do a remote from there, in which I'm going to work the speaker inside and take people's orders, and I'll do that for an hour, and we'll have a lot of fun, and we were going to have guests over there to fill time, and that was all supposed to happen last night. Now, I have been told all summer, just come over any time, everything will be fine, by the people at Stewart's. So last night became the night. Okay, so I invited, because you can't do that for a whole 2 hours, so I invited guests over who I like to have on, one being Mary Ellen Withrow. And Mary Ellen said she would come, and I thought this will be great. About 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I got a message from the people at Stewart's that they were shorthanded last night, and it might not be the best night to come over and do this. So, that's fine. I called the people at Steak and Shake, who we have a good relationship with, and we went out to Steak and Shake and just did the remote out there. I didn't get on the microphone. Hopefully, we will do that at Stewart's sometime before the summer's up, but we just went out to Steak and Shake and did the show. Here's the problem. I did not tell Mary Ellen that I changed the venue and went to Steak and Shake, so she ended up at Stewart's last night, and I feel awful about this, but I'm doing this confession this morning in front of her, because our guest for the 3 hours this morning, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. Mary Ellen, I'm sorry about yesterday.
Okay, Scott. Well, things happen, but I had a chicken sandwich and onion rings due to all that.
Well, when we do set it in stone, we'll have to come and we'll get it all right this next time.
Yes. Yeah, they I think they were short on their help last night.
You know, what do you make of this? All these help wanted signs everywhere.
I know. Boy, you can get a job, I guess.
You can get a job, that's
if you
for
want
sure.
one.
But where are all the people?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. Are they doing something else, or are they doing nothing, or what are they doing?
Well, it's my understanding that the extra $300 has went away this month for unemployment, so I'm not sure where the people are.
Yeah, well, we'll keep looking.
We'll keep looking for them. There certainly has been no lack of news this week, or I guess the last couple weeks in Marion. I guess we'll start on the local level here. Mayor Schertzer was on Tuesday for his regular monthly meeting, and he talked about this ARPA money. Now, if you're not familiar with the ARPA money out there listening, the ARPA money is the money that Marion got because of the COVID relief funds. Now, Mayor Schertzer would like to use that money to hire, I believe it's a police officer. And he presented this Monday at City Council, and apparently there wasn't even a vote taken, no questions were asked about it, and the opposition from Mayor Schertzer, who said that, I wasn't at the meeting, but he said this when he was on Tuesday, is coming from the four Republican members of City Council. What do you make of that, Mary Ellen?
Well, I make of it, if the mayor needs a police officer, they should do something about it, for heaven's sakes.
Well, do you find it interesting that locally we now really care about the party we're in?
Well, we should care about everybody. That's the problem. I just really hate to see all of this divisiveness that's going on, and it's for the good of everybody that people cooperate. That's how you get things done, is by cooperation. It isn't by divisiveness.
When you are on the local level, does the party you belong to mean a whole lot when it comes to local issues?
Well, it does mean something, yes, but probably not as much as it does as you get up the ladder. Yeah.
Well, when you're voting on a police officer, I don't know what your party status would have to do with that vote.
Right. If they need a police officer, they should hire one and not be causing trouble about doing it.
Have you noticed lately the Republican Party in town, and it just is the Republican Party, the Democratic Party hasn't done so much of this, but that press releases are being released. And a lot of times they do say that this is political games, this is, a political attack. A lot of the auditors' press releases have always at the end referred to the attacks on him as being political in nature. People in Marion didn't used to release press releases like that.
Well, the attacks on him are for the terrible job he's doing. That's what the attacks are. When you do a job like he's doing, you get attacked. I don't care what your politics are.
Well, because you have dealt with money over the years, it's interesting to me when it comes to him, because we also learned on Tuesday when the mayor was on that he has not been drawing down on the grants, another thing, for the city of Marion. Now, I believe that's restarted now when the mayor's administration and staff became aware of it, so they have fixed that problem. But that money on drawing down on those grants, according to the mayor, goes to fund firefighters, police officers' salaries, and I guess the reason for it not being done from the auditor was there was a change in personnel in that area.
Another example that he doesn't know what he's doing.
You know, Mary Ellen, when that's being said, how does it happen? Because I don't, has this happened in Marion history where somebody who doesn't know what they're doing has caused such a ruckus in local politics?
I can't remember of anything like this. No, the auditor's job is a very, very important job, the auditor and the treasurer. And this is people's money. And this is where people get upset when you cause trouble with their money.
When you look at this situation, and we're not trying to be negative here, but when we look at the $1.2 million mispayment, when we look at the whole thing with the gift cards and the person in his office, $4,000 in gift cards, I believe it was, in an email scam, when we look at the not drawing down on these grants, when we look that he now has been turned over to the state for an investigation, which I guess they are about 50% done with, according to the mayor, when we look at not meeting with the mayor on a regular basis, although it is my understanding those have resumed in recent times, what the whole thing, it's not just one thing. It's a lot. And it's a lot in a short period of time. Why?
You know, the major thing there was not meeting with the mayor. I think he could have, when you sit down and talk about your job, you find out that you should have done this or maybe you should have done that, and it gets corrected. When you refuse to meet with the person in charge, that is refusing to be on top of maybe what you should be doing. I mean, it's very obvious that this was a problem.
It's my understanding now, and this will be our last little bit on this, but as of Tuesday, I believe, we got the word that because of that mispayment to the IRS of $1.2 million mispayment to the state that should have gone to the IRS. I believe now around $80,000 in fines have been accrued to the city, and there's still one more quarter of fines to come, and it's estimated that that'll be about $60,000. So in the end, this could be in the neighborhood of $120,000, $140,000 in fines because of this mistake, as it's been characterized. Now, none of that money has been paid. The auditor is still trying to get it forgiven, this money, these penalties. But $140,000 in fines, how big a deal of that is that to a community like Marion?
Well, it's a big deal. Yes, it certainly is.
And in the end, what should happen here? The investigation's going on into him.
Well, you just have to wait until all the process goes through. It's everything's a process in government, and it all takes time. But in the meantime, you know, we're losing money.
Now, you have said that you thought he should leave that position.
I have,
resign that position.
Right.
What do you make that people don't leave? Householder had to be voted out. And that took two swats at it after he was arrested by the FBI.
Yeah.
The auditor, I don't think, has any plans to leave on his own volition. Why does this happen? People did used to leave if they got caught in a pickle or were not doing the correct thing.
Well, I can't answer that question.
Mary Ellen, I did want to touch on this. 100 years, the centennial of John Glenn's birthday was, I believe, last weekend. It would have been his 100th birthday. You worked with John Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
Memories of John Glenn.
Yes. Well, I've got a lot of good memories with John Glenn. Of course, you know, I gave him a $20 bill for good luck when he went up in space the second time. And he brought it back and gave it back to me, and it's in my museum. And I, you know, would talk to him about different things when I was in office. And he was a great source of somebody that could be very helpful. He was just a very helpful person. And I really liked John Glenn, and I liked Annie just as much as I did him. Yeah.
Why couldn't he ever get a substantial presidential run off the ground?
Well, he tried, and I was very involved in that. And I remember he stopped running as soon as he was in trouble with getting money. That's where it's all at. You know, when you run for office, you have to have money. And he stopped, and he said, this is it. And then when the next race came up for president, I thought, I'm not going to get involved. And that's when Al Gore ran. And then after listening to Al Gore speak in Cleveland, I said, I can't stay out of the governor's or the president's race. And so, I got involved then in Al Gore's race. But John Glenn was, he was a good candidate, and it just didn't work out.
Being an astronaut, being from Ohio, mm-hmm. being a politician who was very successful, I don't think he ever lost a bid for his Senate seat.
Oh, yes, he did.
Oh, did he?
Against Metzenbaum in the beginning.
Oh, did he?
Metzenbaum beat him. Yeah, they ran against each other.
Mm-hmm. Did you would think this national name would have an easy enough time raising mm-hmm. money, but it just didn't happen that way.
No, Metzenbaum was a good campaigner, and that was a tough race. I don't remember the numbers when it was all finished when Metzenbaum won, but they weren't the best of friends for quite a while, but then they got it worked out, and they were toward the end.
When somebody says something in a campaign, is that reality? Because in the back of your mind, you have to know they're saying that to win.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a reality, sometimes it isn't.
Yeah. Well, did you ever smooth things over with, like, Buck Reinhardt?
No.
No. So that was just...
Why would I smooth anything over with Buck Reinhardt? I hadn't done anything to him.
What, did he smooth things over with you, I guess,
no.
was the...
No.
No. Now, why do you think some people have that mindset? Metzenbaum... Well, I guess who was at fault in the Metzenbaum, Glenn?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't remember.
Yeah.
So sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Buck Reinhardt... stayed, he very much stayed an enemy of mine on his part. I mean, I heard things that he said and so forth, and he was no friend of mine.
Do you think that, because generally, how well did he know you before you ran against
him? He knew me very well.
Oh, he did?
We were both in the County Treasurer's Association, and I had a job that he wanted. I was the legislative chairman. He wanted that job really bad, and then we both decided to run for state treasurer, and I think all the treasurers supported me because they knew what he was like. They didn't like him.
What did he say, or what was his mindset in that campaign that was awful for people who don't remember this? What kinds of things was he saying about you?
Well, he said he didn't think I graduated from high school and things like that.
Well, that is a little rough.
And nasty remarks that I didn't know what I was doing and so forth. Yeah.
Now, this is interesting because a lot of people listening have never been involved in a statewide campaign. Maybe not even a local campaign. When somebody fires something at you like that, and you're running against them, what's the idea? Do you have to fire back? Do you just let it go because you know it's not true?
I let it go. I didn't do anything about it. I just ran a good campaign. He started out his campaign with a lot of money, $550,000. I had nothing. And he spent it very unwisely. And he lost.
He did.
He thought he was going to win, and he lost, you know.
Now, the other two state treasurer races, how would you compare those to the first? Because being an incumbent...
Oh, they were rough.
They were rough as well.
They were very rough, yeah. The second, Jeff, what's the name of the... I never can remember his last name. Jeff... The big ball field.
Oh, in Cleveland.
In Cleveland.
Jacobs?
Yeah. Jeff Jacobs, that's it. I have to work my way into it. He didn't run a good campaign, but he was powerful because of what he stood for in Cleveland. Cleveland is Democratic, and he was cutting into my area. And so that made it a tough race. I had people that voted for him that would have always voted for me. And then the last race was with... Judith Brockman, and she was a very tough campaigner too. She went at it with a vengeance. I mean, very much so. And they were all tough races. The first one I won by just a few thousand votes. I mean, it wasn't even much over 1,000, really. I think. I'm trying to remember. It was about 2,000 and something, I think. And then the last race, I won. I was the top vote getter in Ohio. And she would call the news media on me, and my staff would have to be up all night gathering up material for her press conferences in my office. Yeah, it was really some kind of a campaign and a half when I think back on it.
When you're in campaign mode, how many hours a day do you have to spend on it?
Oh, you're on it constantly. It never lets loose. I mean, you're just gone all hours. You get home in the middle of the night, and you're up right away in the morning, and it just never ends. There's so many. You know, the state of Ohio is a big state. It takes a lot of time to travel to the corners of the state, and you just have to go to here and to there and can't make it sometimes, and you try to get somebody else to take your place and speak, and it's you have to have a good campaign manager, and I did. I had one of the best, but it's worth it when you win, and when you don't win, it's pretty sad, you know.
Who were some of your allies on the state level that you could say, I can't make it to this, could you go and fill in here?
Well, you know, I called on my daughters a lot. They would speak for me. They it gave them good experience. It was tough for them because they hadn't done it, you know. And then I would call on other people. Well, some of the people in my office would go and speak for me. That happened quite a bit. And you know, you had your people that you would see if they could do it or not, and it was really important to have a person there. In most cases, you really want to have somebody there, because otherwise they'll forget about you. Yeah.
Want to talk a little bit about the mayor here in Marion. He's in the middle of his fourth term. He worked for you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you've known him. You and he go back quite a ways.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you been surprised? Did you know back then that he had political ambition to stay in the political field?
Well, I knew he had political ambition because he wanted to work for me and he wanted to work for Sherrod Brown. You could tell that he was interested in politics, and so he's followed through on it.
When it comes to being mayor, right now, if he fills out this term, it would be 16 years, same as Jack Kellogg. Have you been surprised that he has stayed in Marion? Because he's a younger guy than Jack Kellogg was.
Well, he's done a good job as mayor, and it depends on what things come up that are an opportunity for you, and those don't always work out. But I think he's done a fine job.
Do you think some of that has to do with he, I believe, took office in 2008. The election was 2007 that elected him to his first mayoral term. Do you think, I mean, it's pretty well been a Republican governor pretty much since mm-hmm. he was elected.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a Republican legislature in Ohio since then. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
I don't know. Why would you ask that? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I would think that, not that I don't know anything that's going on, but I would think if a Democrat was, because he did, see, I don't know what the terminology is. He didn't run, I guess, for lieutenant governor. He was
asked to be
Pillage's.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So if the Democrats had control of Ohio, they do have to fill a lot of positions.
Yeah.
And maybe he would have been asked to fill one of those positions. Highly unlikely a Republican would ask a Democratic mayor.
Right. That's right.
And for most of his term, we've had Republican control with mm-hmm. Kasich and DeWine here
yeah.
in Ohio.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So do you think that might be a reason?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What do you, do they ever cross party lines?
Once in a blue moon.
Blue moon.
Yeah. When they feel that they have to win over the other party, they feel that it's necessary to get some support from the other party, they'll appoint another person from the other party, you know. You see that happen. It's happened in Biden's administration. He has a person.
When it comes to the mayor, at the end of this next term, I believe he'll only be mid-50s. I think he'll still be in his mid-50s.
He's young, yeah.
Would you think he would run for another term? Do you think he might go on to a higher position? He'll still be 10 years shy of retirement age.
Yeah, well, he's got the opportunity. He's done a fine job as mayor, so he'll have opportunities.
Do you see any other people on the local level who catch your eye? You hear them speak or say something, and you think, well, there might be something there.
Joanne Kasotis, I tell you, she's good. Jan Draper, they're good. You know, they've been in there a long time. Jan Draper's father was judge when I was county treasurer, and she knows politics. Yeah.
Is there on the local? Was the local politics of Marion different when you came back from Washington than it was when you left? Because I think a span of about 17 years passed there.
Right. It was different. Yeah.
What was the biggest difference?
The change in this union support.
Why do you think that happened?
I don't know. It goes to the unions. I can't answer that.
When we look at the local government right now, being that there is this division, Republican and Democrat, because city council, I believe all city council seats are up this November, what do you think the voters should think about when they go and vote this fall?
Well, they should think about how well that person has done in office and look at the person that's running, and if they think they'll do a better job, they should vote for them. It's very important to have good people in government, and if somebody has not done a good job, why would you vote for them again?
You know, that's a big question across the state of Ohio right now, because we looked at Larry Householder. He became a poster child for this. He was arrested last July about a year ago now, by the FBI, and yet in November he won his election.
It's unreal, isn't it?
Yeah. So how does that happen?
It happened because the Democrats didn't run anybody against him, and there's your first mistake right there.
Do you think, we've talked about the Democratic Party in Ohio, but do you think that there is just a systemic problem there in getting people to run?
Well, yes, when you're when you've got a lot of the other party in office, you sometimes feel like, well, maybe I won't win. I don't think I want to run. You really hesitate to run for office when you don't think your chances are very good.
People, we always have issues. Cities do all across the country. What do you think now is an issue in Marion that we're going to face in maybe the next 5-10 years?
In Marion?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you think crime's always an issue?
Well, I suppose. I don't know. How is crime in Marion?
My understanding last time I spoke to somebody was it was fairly level, but a little bit on the upswing.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I just met the sheriff the other day, and I hadn't heard about anything that was really causing any difficulties here or there.
You know, there's a field, law enforcement, the sheriff, they always run as Republicans or Democrats, but it doesn't seem to mean a whole lot once they're in the position. They do have a political affiliation. A lot of times they will endorse candidates, but it really doesn't seem like that matters a whole lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. If they're doing a good job. And I think it's the same with, say, the mayor. I think if the mayor's doing a good job, why would you take them out of that position?
When you endorse somebody, because you've done quite a bit of that since you've been back in Marion, what's the criteria you look for?
I look at the person, and I look at who's running against them, and I have my reasons usually when I endorse somebody. Yeah.
Before we get to everything, matter of fact, we'll save the first energy thing for next hour because that's a whole story unto itself.
Right.
But we are having a gubernatorial race next year. It's getting closer and closer. We now know a lot more, I think, than last time we talked. Renacci's in on the Republican side. First time a governor, an incumbent, has been primaried since the 1930s. DeWine's in. We'll talk about some of his problems next hour. But I assume you won't be endorsing either one of those gentlemen.
No.
On the other side, we've got Nan Whaley.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Mayor Cranley. Are you surprised that in a year when the Republicans seem to have so much trouble, are having so much trouble, that as we approach the December filing date, which is creeping up there, that more Democrats aren't in this race?
Oh, you've got two on each side.
Last time we had quite a few when it was an open seat.
Yeah, well.
We had Kucinich and Cordray.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you've got two good people running on the Democratic side.
Go ahead, caller. Hello, caller. Oh, we'll call back. If that was you, give us a buzz back. If you have a question, we'll be glad to talk about it. 740-383-9944. If that was you, call back in. I'm just surprised that, because you had really big names last time. You had Cordray, who came from national government. You had Kucinich, who came from national government.
Mm-hmm.
You had O'Neill, who had been on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It just seemed...
They were tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This time, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot... you have a mayor of Dayton.
Well, she's a good candidate. She's been through a lot as mayor of Dayton. Dayton's a big city.
But the big question is, and it's horrible that we still have to ask this in 2021, does being a woman matter? Does she have to address this?
Well, she's a woman, and it's very obvious, so we'll find out. But I think she's got a very good chance.
Do the Democrats it's very similar to this degree. In 2016, when Donald Trump won the presidency, you had a knockdown dragout in the Republican primary. And people thought at that time that that was going to damage them to the point to where you would have a Democrat winning the White House, being Hillary Clinton. Everybody thought that. And come to find out, I think Hillary Clinton herself said the reason I didn't win, a big part of it was I was a woman. Misogyny was a big part of her explanation, mm-hmm. amongst other things.
Yeah.
Joe Biden runs against Trump, and he wins. So do we have that possibly here in Ohio, where the Republicans are going to go through a knockdown dragout? They've got a whole mess over there.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever emerges... Could the Democrats have trouble if it is Nan Whaley, just based on the fact that she's a woman?
No, I think it will be to her advantage, really. I think, you know, the women that I've known in office were such good people that, you know, honest, hardworking people holding office. It was so evident to me that women do such a good job. I think she'll be our next governor.
Have you made an endorsement at this point?
Yes.
And it's for?
For her.
For her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, has that come out anywhere as of yet?
I don't know if she's said it anywhere, but I just, you know, mentioned it for the first time.
Oh.
Yeah. I think she's got the ability to be a very good governor.
Now, you have had conversations with her, I believe, after the last time she was on the program here.
Yeah, right.
Not what you talked about, but what did those personal conversations tell you about Nan Whaley?
Well, it's just that I've observed her operation in Dayton and how she handled the problems that she had, and she handled them very well. And that's what you look at. How does that person handle problems? Because everybody's going to have problems in office, and you have to be able to do that, or you're not a good office holder.
Now, if asked, would you do campaigning for her?
Sure. But, you know, my age is a little bit of a problem, and I'm not going to travel, so...
Would you travel outside of Marion at this point?
Well, I might. I don't know. You know, I might.
It's, we talked one time, and you said you still love politics.
I do. You do. Yes.
Is it, when an election like this comes up, and this is going to be an interesting gubernatorial race to be mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. You've got an incumbent. You've got a primaried incumbent. You've got scandals. We'll talk about that next hour. You've got a woman who possibly could be the first female governor in Ohio.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
It is. Yes.
They get the juices flowing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. It's interesting because sometimes, you know, we have races, but they're a little, you know, they're not as exciting as others.
That's right.
When we look back, because obviously you were a big supporter of Rich Cordray's as well.
Yes.
4 years ago.
Yes.
What was his, and I know you love the guy, but what was his mistake in the end?
Well, I'll tell you, DeWine is a tough campaigner, and the things that he had on television were really very, very hard on the race. And, it's always interesting if he's going to run again, which I was very surprised that he was going to run again. We'll see, you know, how things go, but I remember when he ran against John Glenn, it was vicious, just vicious, yeah.
We certainly probably don't know the name, but being the lieutenant governor partner in these races has become a huge deal now, much more than it used to be. What type of person should Nan Whaley look at for her partner in this? John Husted will be there for DeWine, we think. And Renacci, I don't think, has said yet, but I would assume it would be somebody of his philosophy. Who should, what type of person should Nan Whaley pick?
Well, she would know that better than anyone. You would want somebody that supports the things that you maybe are not real strong in, if you can get somebody that's going to take up that balance for you.
Should it be a man?
It could be. I don't know. She would know what person would be a good balance for her. And it might be a man. It might be a woman. I don't know. You know.
Do you think that it has to be that way? Because I look back at the pillage thing. Mayor Schertzer obviously was a man, but, you know, I wonder how much thought goes into that.
Yeah,
when you're running.
Yeah. Well, it's on your mind, I'm sure.
And Kucinich and Cordray both picked women mm-hmm. as their lieutenant governor mm-hmm. candidates. So it's interesting how that does play out.
It is. Yeah. You want somebody that really knows what they're doing, too, because, it's been interesting to watch the last few lieutenant governors. Husted has been very active. You know, he's been on right after DeWine every time on the press releases and the talking about the COVID. So the public has seen him a lot. He's had a good time to be seen and be known about. A lot of times you don't know who the lieutenant governor is because you never see him and you never hear him.
You know, when we look at the end of Vax-a-Million, I don't know if we've talked a lot since that ended on the air, 5 weeks, the vaccination rate in Ohio never got above 50%. Marion sits at 40% as of yesterday. Was that a good idea in the end?
What?
Vax-a-Million.
Well, You know what I'm thinking about, Scott?
What's that?
The voting was about 30% when I ran.
Mm.
Yeah. You're talking about a lot more people voting. The Maximilian, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I asked Governor Strickland this yesterday because, ironically, you both were on right before Maximilian started, and you both said, we'll give it a try.
Yeah.
And as long as it doesn't become political, okay. Governor DeWine showed up on somebody's lawn in Union County.
Yeah.
He Skyped in the winners, I think, in the last two press conferences. When those things happened, what'd you think?
Well, you know, I kept looking to see if the number of people were being vaccinated, if it had gone up. I guess it went up a little. I don't know how much it went up. But I was shocked when he came out with that. I thought, why not 20,000? You know, he probably figured out how much was going to go back to the state for taxes and all that.
They always have an eye out for that sort of thing.
Right,
don't they?
Right, don't yeah. They? But I thought, my gosh, $1 million. I mean, and I thought, you know, nobody I know is going to ever see that. Everybody told me they're all signed up, but, you know, I thought it was ridiculous.
Marion County, as I said, we talked to the health department yesterday, sits at 40%. 40% after 7 months now of having these shots available and being free. 40% here in this county. What does that tell you?
You know, I listened to some interviews this morning on television, and I think they were health people, said they were afraid to be vaccinated because it hadn't been tested enough. And I mean, all these people have been vaccinated, and most of them aren't getting the virus. And, you know, how much do they need to be influenced here? It was four young women were saying that they didn't trust it yet.
Well, you know, and Dr. Arusi was on this week. We're talking about the start of schools here in just a couple weeks, 15, 16 days, and there will be no mask mandate in the schools, and there will be, aside from some cleaning and ventilation differences, people will be back at the football games at this point on Friday night, and here we are. In Marion County, at least, sitting at 40%, the COVID rate has tripled in the last 2 weeks, 55 cases in 2 weeks and 8 cases in 1 day recently, and then the kids all go back to school. No masks, no social distancing.
Yeah.
Could we be headed for a problem here?
I don't know, but, and I guess they haven't okayed the vaccine for under 12, is that right?
Under 12.
Yeah, I mean, the poor little kids can't get vaccinated.
Well, and I worry about the teachers who are a little older than those young kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting when school starts.
Yeah.
Do you think people have the impression that this pandemic's over?
Well, I think we're all scared when we hear that people that are vaccinated are getting it. That really bothers you.
Well, and I should mention, just to be on the level, that of these 55 cases here in Marion, some of those, they don't have the exact numbers yet because it's a process with the health department. We'll get them at some point. But we do know that some of those 55 cases were vaccinated people.
Yeah, that scares you. Yeah.
It does, because we don't know how ill they're getting because of HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
And for people who aren't vaccinated, you know they're saying, well, gee whiz, it didn't help them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough, tough thing here.
Yeah.
And now we've got a whole new variation that's more highly contagious than the original version.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
We're coming back next hour with the legendary Mary Ellen Withrow, and we're going to talk about First Energy, how that impacts the Ohio legislature, and right now impacts the governor's office here in Ohio. It is a mess, to be sure. Back in 15 minutes with Mary Ellen.
Inside, I am sitting right now inside the Quicken Loans Arena, looking at the Oregon delegation from the rafters.
No kidding, you're among the seats.
I am in the seats right now. I can see Oregon and Indiana and New Hampshire. I am in the arena.
Wow. Say, Scott, were you there last night for Cruz?
I was, and let me tell you, one of the discussions yesterday certainly was on the division feeling here at the Republican National Convention. And if the boos you heard on television was something last night, you should have heard the boos in this arena.
No kidding.